The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
What you said, I love it, because you know, in that life insurance example, when you make that mindset shift, which is what I work with a lot of clients, a lot of teams, a lot of individuals who they mean well, they want to help people. They just don't want to cross that line into what they think it selling is.
Yeah, what are they going to think of me?
That life insurance example. Again, that's a perfect example of what I always think about. And then what I always teach people to think is, what is the worst case scenario? What happens if they don't buy from you? What could happen to their life? And again, I've had the benefit early on of dealing with people who are in foreclosure. I didn't think of myself as a salesperson. I had to learn really quickly that even if somebody's in a lot of trouble in their life, they still aren't going to make good decisions. Because if they made good decisions, they wouldn't have gotten that place in the first unless like there's some times where there's crazy circumstances. Otherwise, it's usually a series of choices. And so to get them unstuck takes a lot of effort. That's where I actually learned persuasion, like in the trenches. But I also learned what happens when I couldn't help somebody move forward. It meant them being homeless. It meant the sheriff coming at 10 o'clock and putting all their stuff on the curb and then potentially living under a bridge. I mean, I saw that many times. And so my mind always goes there as the outcome if I don't help somebody in front of me. And then my pressure, if you will, comes from a completely different place. It comes from I care so much about you, I literally can't not help you buy, which is a totally different thing. And then the other part, going back to the doctor professional part, this is what I work with a lot of clients on too, is there's the mindset, there's the attitude, and that coming at it from that part, you know, where that can be sensed. But then it's also the what you're saying too, which is setting those expectations, which is saying the things even a doctor says, even if you know they're a doctor and I'm a patient, the doctor will sit down and say, I'm going to do this exam based on what I see. I'm going to tell you what you should do. And then we're going to get you set up. Like they outline the conversation, the relationship and the steps. A lot of salespeople, they just jump into and go, okay, I'm either going to sell you or not, but they don't understand the other person has no idea what's about.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit BeinhackerLaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Hey, everybody. It's Jason Cutter, author of Selling with Authentic Persuasion, Transform from Order Taker to Quota Breaker, host of the Authentic Persuasion Show. And I am super excited to be here to talk about accidental entrepreneurship and my journey here to where I'm at right now.
All right. So Jason Cutter, you are joining me today. I appreciate it. We've talked a lot about sales. I love talking about sales. I've always been I was a terrible salesman when I was little, and I was young coming out of college and then law school. And I was like, I got to learn this stuff. But before we jump into your background and everything, I was looking, you are, fittingly so, you were a marine biology major, which totally makes sense when it comes to sales. Out in California, you have been, I guess you also have an MBA, right? So that gets us into sales. And then you also host your own podcast, right? You said the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Yep.
Which people can find online. So I thank you for joining me. And we've been online with a bunch of things where you've been speaking. I love your stuff. I've been looking through your book. I haven't read the whole book, but I got so many books from so many guests. You probably have the same thing. I'm like, they're like reference guides for me, right? You like look through them, make notes and stuff like that. So, and I want to get into things like the common mistakes, you know, that sales professionals make and things like that. But why don't you tell me about before the marine biology stuff, what about your background and where you're from, where you grew up?
Yeah, no. And I'm like I said, I love having these conversations. I love being here. I'm excited that we've made this happen.
Yes. Make some good content, share some good ideas, right?
Yeah. Well, and help people who, you know, might be on the same path or have gone down similar paths that I was on. I mean, it's one of those things where kind of more of the punchline is I was always embarrassed and afraid to talk about the path that I had been on, because it was such a, I'll say it, a hot mess. And so, yeah. So as a kid, I was a shy, awkward, bullied, late blooming only child, still an only child. That part hasn't changed. The other parts have moderately changed.
It'd be kind of weird if it changed, right?
I don't get bullied as much anymore.
I did meet a guy whose dad died and he discovered he had like 8 brothers and sisters he never knew about.
What?
So hopefully that won't happen to you.
I don't think that'll happen. I'm not ever discounting anything. I'll never say never, but I'm Ding pretty dong. Sure yeah. I would know. My parents are still together. And, you know, I was the product of 2 analytical parents. So my parents, great, wonderful, nurturing, supportive parents. My mom was a banker and in finance. My dad was in engineering and project management and leadership. And they, you know, worked their way up in careers without college degrees, you know, back in that baby boomer era. And then I came along. And so it was a very analytical household. And then also as a result of that, plus one of my mom's first jobs, which was working at a furniture store in the back office and listening to the comments and the things that the salespeople said after, right, you know, selling people stuff. And it wasn't very flattering.
The behind the scenes comments, you're saying? The behind the scenes comments?
Yeah, just all those, like, I got him to pay this and I ripped him off for that. You know, all those classic.
Thin men. Yeah, the old. Now, can I ask you a question? You said your parents are both professionals, but none of them went to college. How was your dad an engineer?
So he was in the Navy for 4 years and then got a job and then literally worked his way up. So he took his Navy expertise, his nuclear power engineering experience that he did from working on ships and parlayed that into 39 years at a research engineer company working as well.
That answered the question.
And then my mom took the bookkeeping skills that she got from the furniture store and parlayed that into working at a bank and then working for a city government. And so, yeah. So then, you know, I was the one that used to go to college. But yeah, growing up, my parents, especially my mom, strong dislike, let's just say hate, for salespeople. And that's what I was handed. That's what I was
right. Well, that's the impression we all get. That's what the media does. That's what movies do.
And anytime you go to buy something where there's, you know, commissions and thing incentives involved, like buying a car, that was the experience.
Oh, they must be taking advantage of me. Right. Why wouldn't anybody take advantage of me? Right.
Yeah. And every 2 years when we'd buy a new car, it was just a long drawn out battle at the dealership. I remember many Sundays spent in watching a crappy TV in a room that smelled like tires and stale coffee, waiting for my parents to battle them.
The worst experience buying a car. That's an industry that needs a major training and regulation.
Yeah. Well, and the indicator for that industry, if anyone doesn't believe that, is the fact that you can now buy a car through an app from a vending machine and have it delivered without dealing with a human. That should tell you how bad your industry is with a reputation.
Yeah. That people realize that people really don't want to deal with the salespeople.
That's it. Yeah. So given all that background, given my childhood and given that analytical nature, I chose marine biology and sharks over people as the direction I wanted to go with life.
Right.
Which is interesting.
And that was safer that for you, right? Out. Sharks instead of people.
Safer, much more reliable. Sharks have one thing on their mind. They go one direction.
Right.
You just deal, you know, watch out for the business end and you'll be okay. Humans are much less predictable.
That's pretty funny, but it's true, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And you grew up in California, or is that what, just did. Where you went to school?
No, grew up in the Bay Area, then went to UC Santa Cruz. Marine biology, it was way too popular, and it wasn't really my calling, so I ended up moving to Washington State. I worked at Microsoft for a couple years doing tech support, thinking I wanted to get into computers. That also wasn't something I cared about, realized in there. We all lost our jobs at that point. It's when they started outsourcing to overseas, China and India. Some of us, like you and I, we remember when it was actually done in the US. And I was one of those people. And then it moved and I was happy with that because I didn't want to do it anymore. Ended up just falling into a job in the mortgage business at age 27, which was technically my first sales job, but it was the housing boom. Everyone wanted to buy a house. It was pure order taking. And kind of started me off in sales, but it wasn't for maybe about 6 years later that I considered myself a salesperson.
Right. Yeah. A lot of people don't. Well, look, I mean, to a certain extent, we're all salespeople. A lot of people don't want to consider themselves salespeople. So did you go get your MBA after that?
I did. So I went from the mortgage business to helping people who are in foreclosure to leading teams in various debt-related verticals, you know, helping people who had credit card debt get into, you know, programs to manage that. I've always been on the service side, you know, selling services and helping people in some way, no matter what it's been. I've never sold products and I've never been interested in selling things that people
not even intangible products like insurance and things like that. Nothing.
That kind of stuff where it's in the service intangible product, but not a physical product.
Right. Not like a car.
I think that'd be not like a car or a washer and dryer. That seems too easy to me because then you can actually see it and be like, yeah, I like that. That's good.
Well, that's the right. That's like I grew up in the life insurance business. My dad was in insurance since the mid-60s. I mean, that is a sales business. I mean, you can't. It's something that nobody wants until they can't get it. And it, you know, it's a long haul and you got to qualify and all that kind of stuff. If you could put somebody in a car with the leather and the and all the lights and the, I mean, come on, you can't even
new
beat
car
that.
Smell. There's no new life insurance smell that just really don't have that turns everybody on.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's something we should work on. We can partner
work
on.
I've never thought of that before until this moment, but that's what you need. You need that new insurance smell, that new attorney smell. Oh, this is a great smell. I'm going to get this new attorney.
Could you imagine? So I know you speak to a lot of insurance groups and stuff. You go speak to these guys and be like, listen, on your way out, we have a table here. You can buy your new life insurance smell. And I'm telling you, like it's pheromones, you'll sell like hotcakes.
It'll take you back to your very first life insurance policy and what your life was like. That's what it'll
smell like. Right, exactly. You can reminisce. Yeah. That's so funny.
Yeah, so I was in sales leadership and then I switched to actually managing outside offices who were essentially affiliate / franchises, if you will. And I really fell in love and saw my strength and my superpower was coaching and training and then also helping other teams become successful, not just selling myself, but just like that whole aspect. And that's when it triggered for me looking backwards after a few years where I was like, that's what I want to do. That part of consulting and coaching and training where it's like fixing and building all those fun parts of it. When things are running smooth, that's when I lose interest. I'm like, okay, that's cool. But I want to move on to a new kind of challenge or project. And that's when I realized I wanted to long-term go into some kind of consulting. And then that's what triggered the MBA. Cause I was like, okay, I'm a dude with a marine biology degree that's been doing some sales.
Yeah. You need some cred.
Yeah. Some cred, and then the business acumen to go with it. Like, you know, all those classes you take just filled in a lot of gaps of things I'd never seen before.
Now, a lot of the coaching you were doing, those were like call center type of things. These were people on the phone that were doing selling. Mm-hmm. No face-to-face stuff at that point.
No. Well, so when I first started in the mortgage business, that was face-to-face. In fact,
but not the people you were training, right?
No. So in the very beginning, when I was selling it myself, it was all face to face. We were taught to like get a meeting as fast as possible. Don't do anything over the phone, build relationships. Years later, I ended up doing everything over the phone, which I didn't think was possible. And then I learned it was possible. And then since then, I have pretty much only worked in verticals or with companies primarily that are over the phone, now over video. And, right. You know, obviously it's a significantly different challenge when you can't see somebody, read their body language. You have to listen really well. And, you know, that's hard for a lot of salespeople.
Right. Okay. So I'll get back. I have plenty of questions before I get back to that. So you went off to MBA school. I'm very interested because I passed on my MBA coming out of college. I was like, I don't know if I really want to go the MBA track, but I went to law school because I felt I wasn't analytical enough and I wanted to be a better reader, and still not a better reader, but I, you know, I'm definitely more analytical, but I'm curious to learn. This is obviously a ways back, so it might've changed now. What kind of sales things you learned during your MBA program?
You know, I didn't really learn much. And when I did my MBA, it was later in life, right? So late 30s.
Right. Sure.
So I had a bunch of experience, and it was easy because a lot of the stuff that was discussed, I had experience in. So write a paper about or human resources, write a paper around, you know, corporate culture.
And you've been in those. Oh, that's right. You're talking about kids that came out of college and went there. They're like, they
don't know. And a lot of the students in the classes I was in, if they went straight from bachelor's to master's, they're just like, they struggled because they didn't have experience. I just was like, okay, I've got all kinds of, I know what I want to chat about. Sales, not so much. You know, there's some personality, some behavior. There was no sales specific class. My focus for my MBA and why I chose the school I went to, because they have had a focus in operations and supply chain management. And that operations management piece is what I really wanted to strategically calculate and figure out what it takes to run an operation, even a call center, versus like, I think we need 10 more people. Instead, here's the math behind needing 10 more people.
Okay. All right. That's interesting. The reason I prefaced my question was there may be more, you know, many of the MBA programs now may have those parts of their curriculum, but I really don't know. I know there's entrepreneurship programs now, so.
Yeah, I think the entrepreneurship programs have that for sure. I mean, that was 4-ish years ago. So obviously some things changed. One thing that's different now than even then was bachelor's programs in professional sales that you can now get where they're preparing you for professional selling career.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think people realize that, what is it? The second oldest profession in the world, selling?
That's it.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. It drives everything.
Yep.
Drives everything. Okay. So take me through then, you know, the whole process of what you're doing now and your book and, you know, what, because you got your MBA, you said about 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And then you launched your career coming at, and you're like, I'm in, I'm here. You were already coaching at that point, right?
Nope. So sort of. So I started the MBA process. I was doing a completely different line of work that has nothing to do with sales, that doesn't make any sense either with my degree, my marine biology degree either. And so I was doing that and I was like, I want to get out of this line of work. Let me get my MBA. I want to do the consulting. Let me build into that. Halfway through my consulting, I connected with somebody I knew before. He made me an offer to come work for him and essentially be the in-house consultant, if you will, and do everything that I'm really good at internally in many different departments. And it was like, that's great. So I did that, finished my MBA, was there for 3 years. When that ended, then I dove into this, which has now been, you know, about 2.5 years.
So what did that company do?
That was helping people with student loan debt get
programs
to help with their payments. Yeah. So it was in a credit, you know, helping people with credit card debt and then later on with the student loan debt.
Okay. So, unless you have some more comments about your life and story, I want to get into all the good stuff and the sales stuff that you're teaching everybody. And by the way, your book, which I assume is on Amazon, we'll put a link in the show notes, Selling with Authentic Persuasion, a real, you know, wealth of, I mean, a real good primer for selling. Because that's the problem. The authentic stuff, people nowadays see through everything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because what's fascinating to me, and this is just human psychology and behavior, is we see through, I'm just going to call it the gross stuff, right? The manipulating, the hard, the pressure sales, the tricks, right, the tactics. Most people can identify those, but a lot of times emotionally, they still want that thing that they're trying to buy. And so they tolerate it, like the car, right? So like people buy cars. You know, they make the decision to buy a car based off of emotions. Very few people need a new car, maybe a used car, but you don't need a new car, but you want it emotionally for various reasons, whatever.
Right.
And then what happens is you're hoping someone's going to prove to you intellectually that it's a good decision and it makes sense. And so that's what happens. And people go into those, even if you're dealing with somebody you don't want to deal with, if you're committed to that emotional decision, you're not going to back down.
You're going to put up with a lot. It. Yeah.
You're going to regret it 5 minutes later, but you're not going to back down before you get into that. And so what happens, and this is what I see a lot and why the book, the subtitle of the book is, you know, transform from order taker to quota breaker, is what happens. And I'll take myself, for example, which for me, and then also the, I don't know how many hundreds of salespeople I've seen in companies over the years.
Yeah.
That most people, they have those experiences before stepping in the role of any kind of sales. And they go, I don't want to be like that person. That's gross and terrible. Right. And if that's what it takes to win, I'm not going to do it. So what happens? They go to the complete other end, which is great at building rapport. They can share some empathy. They really want to help people out, but they're more like an order taker. They're more of a doormat, which is so they're too far at the other extreme. And then for me, what I found is there's a fantastic and successful place in the middle, which I've labeled authentic persuasion, which, you know, kind of describes it all, but it's where you're selling like a professional. So you're not crossing the line into manipulating, but you're using persuasion to help the right people make the right buying decisions. And then doing that repetitively where it feels true for you, authentic for you.
Right. Well, I guess that's what true sales is, right? It's helping people to make a decision they should be making for themselves, not convincing them to buy something they don't need. That's not sales. That's manipulation, like you said. But I guess it's really like the closing. I hate to use the word, but it's the closing skills that they're really missing. So you get the person on the other end of the spectrum and they're all happy. I love you, whatever. And then you leave and they don't have a sale. And they're like, well, why didn't you ask them, you know, ask them a sign or whatever. Oh, you know?
Yeah.
And I guess that's what they're missing. A lot of these people, huh?
It is. And, if I can, I'll share an interesting example.
Yeah,
that,
stories are good.
You know, of what it would be like in a different profession that we take as a profession. So imagine, you know, this is, I always laugh when I even tell my own story. So imagine you break your arm and you go into the emergency room and you go to the doctor. They see you, they examine you, do the x-rays, come back and say, your arm is broken. It's a fracture right here. We're going to have to re-break your arm. We'll put a cast on it. And it's going to hurt for a while. We'll give you some pain meds. Here's a brochure on how broken arms work and how to fix it. And I'm going to send you a follow-up email with have the information, the pricing. And then what I'll do is I'll follow up with you next week. I'll give you a call, see if you've decided. I know you probably want to talk to somebody, maybe like your spouse or your boss. And, you know, you talk to them about it. Oh, by the way, if you decide to do this by next Friday, it's the end of the month. And so we're doing a discount. We do 20% off if you buy it before the end of the month or the quarter. And, you know, just let us know. Here's my card. Right. And, you know, we'll be in touch. I'll follow up with you next week.
Right. He left out the part. Like, if you don't get back to me soon, your arm's going to be really fucked up. Yeah. So
none of that. Right. And so it's a ludicrous example, which is why I use it all the time, because that's not what
makes
they
the
would
point.
Do.
Yeah.
And the reason why they don't do that is because they're a professional. Now they have the advantage, just like you as an attorney have the advantage of a professional actually meaning something, which is there's an oath, a code of conduct. There's some testing involved. There's a board. There's requirements. There's somebody keeping everyone in line, right? If that doctor did that thing in that example I just shared, that would be malpractice and they would be toast.
Clearly.
That's it. It's really easy. They took a Hippocratic oath that says they're not going to do undue harm. And if they let somebody walk out like that without trying their hardest to get that person to agree to getting the arm fixed, it would feel like a failure professionally and personally to them as a medical professional. The problem is in sales, there is no profession. There's no governing body. There's no testing.
Right.
There's nobody keeping everyone in check. And so what happens instead in that doctor example? Well, you go in, they do their process, they come back and they say, it's broken. We need to re-break it. We need to cast it. It's going to hurt. We're going to give you some pain meds.
Well, we're going to prepare the ER.
Begin?
Yeah, exactly.
That's it. Do you have any questions before we begin? No, hold on. This is going to hurt. I promise we'll get you on your way. And then we'll see you in 6 weeks. Get ready. And then they just assume it because they know that their duty as a professional is to help you. And so when you see sales that same way, when it's something I'm doing for you and with you instead of to you, then I'm here to help you. And then that close, right? That pushy part that people don't like at the end is actually not pushing them. It's pulling them to the solution that's going to make them into a better place.
Well, a lot of it comes down to though psychology, right? Because the doctor and the patient in those situations have an expectation of how they're going to deal with each other, right? So, and the doctor knows that. So the problem with the salesperson is that they believe, and it may not be true, by the way, that the buyer or the potential customer, the prospect, or whatever we want to call them, right?
Yeah.
Does not have that expectation, that, you know, thinks that you're trying to rip them off. And it's the good salespeople who have, I mean, it's not even conscious anymore when they get good at it, but they go in with the expectation that the doctor has, that I'm here. It's my obligation to help you make this decision because I wouldn't be proposing it to you if it wasn't the right thing, you know, for you to do. And there's a level of confidence that you have to portray to people. The authenticness definitely is probably 98% of the deal, right? Because if you believe it in your mind, people will start to. I know some guys in the insurance business, for example, we were talking about how they have some of the best salespeople in the world because it is hard to sell, especially like life insurance. Forget it. Nobody wants it. It's very hard to sell. I know some guys where, and I've asked, because as an attorney, I work a lot of these guys. You ask the clients, well, you know, they tell you about the experience. They're like, you know, when we were with Jason and he was helping us through the life insurance, oh my God, I felt like I could buy anything. Like, it's just the way you were, either through training or whatever. That's what's missing. And I think, like you're selling, oh, I mean, what you're saying about all the authentic persuasion, people have to start, and maybe they need your help to do it, of course, to change that paradigm in their head. They should be approaching it from the doctor's standpoint. I'm not helping you by letting you go and listen to a brochure. And in life insurance case, you might die in a week. Now, there's other things. Obviously, you wouldn't suffer terrible loss if you waited a week. But still, I mean, you got to give them the opportunity to make a decision that's good for them instead of saying, oh, well, here's a brochure. And, you know, look it over and then if you like it, you can call me, maybe some questions will think, and they dance around this stuff. And you see these people all the time, right?
Yeah. And I 100% agree what you said. I love it because, you know, in that life insurance example, when you make that mindset shift, which is what I work with a lot of clients, a lot of teams, a lot of individuals who they mean well, they want to help people. They just don't want to cross that line into what they think it selling is.
Yeah. What are they going to think of me?
That life insurance example, again, that's a perfect example of what I always think about. And then what I always teach people to think is, what is the worst case scenario? What happens if they don't buy from you? What could happen to their life? And again, I've had the benefit early on of dealing with people who are in foreclosure. I didn't think of myself as a salesperson. I had to learn really quickly that even if somebody's in a lot of trouble in their life, they still aren't going to make good decisions. Because if they made good decisions, they wouldn't have gotten that place in the first place. Unless there's some times where there's crazy circumstances. Otherwise, it's usually a series of choices. And so to get them unstuck takes a lot of effort. That's where I actually learned persuasion, like in the trenches. But I also learned what happens when I couldn't help somebody move forward. It meant them being homeless. It meant the sheriff coming at 10 o'clock and putting all their stuff on the curb and then potentially living under a bridge. I mean, I saw that many times. And so my mind always goes there as the outcome if I don't help somebody in front of me. And then my pressure, if you will, comes from a completely different place. It comes from I care so much about you, I literally can't not help you buy, which is a totally different thing. And then the other part, going back to the doctor professional part, this is what I work with a lot of clients on too, is there's the mindset, there's the attitude, and that coming at it from that part, you know, where that can be sensed, but then it's also the what you're saying too, which is setting those expectations, which is saying the things even a doctor says, even if you know they're a doctor and I'm a patient, the doctor will sit down and say, I'm going to do this exam based on what I see. I'm going to tell you what you should do. And then we're going to get you set up. Like they outline the conversation, the relationship and the steps. A lot of salespeople, they just jump into and go, okay, I'm either going to sell you or not, but they don't understand the other person has no idea what's about, you know, to happen in the conversation.
Right. Well, that's the difference between being a professional and just, right. I hate to use the term, just trying to sell shit. And look, yeah. There are some professions where people throw enough up against the wall. They may work very hard and too hard and they make money and, you know, they get through it and it fits the person. That's fine. Most people though are not comfortable with, you know, they want to feel like they're doing good. They want to feel like the other person feels has this perception. I think they're really worried about the perception that the other person has. And I think like what you said, what's the worst that can happen if you don't sell them? I think what's the worst that can happen if you try, if you do the right thing and they're offended or they're, then you couldn't help them anyway. Or maybe they're not really your friend. I mean, if they are your friends, you know, before that, like what's the worst? We're not going to throw a tomato at you. I mean,
yeah. And really it's about being clear on it. I have forcefully told some people what they should be doing. And I give them the disclaimer that this isn't about me, right? At the end of when I used to help people with credit card debt, I would tell people like, you need to do this. We need to sign you up. And they're like, well, you're just trying to push me. It's no. Like when we hang up, this is what I would tell people. When we hang up this phone and I go home tonight, I don't have $50,000 in credit card debt at 29%. Right. If you don't let me help you with this, you still have that debt. And you're in trouble and you know that. And so this isn't about me. Like there's enough people in debt. I can talk to all of them. It's about you.
Yeah, it's always more people.
And I mean it. That's the authentic piece, right? Because there's a lot of shady people who will say that kind of stuff, but they don't really mean it. And they're just trying to get the deal done. I honestly mean it. That's why the authentic piece comes even before the persuasion, right? A lot of people come to me and say, all right, what's the one question I can ask? How do I close deals? What's the best close I can use? I'm like, no, let's deal with you and your mindset and your authenticity first. Because once you do that, almost doesn't matter what you say because people will appreciate you as a different type of salesperson.
Yeah, well, there are no tricks. That's the secret. Right. The secret is there are no secrets. Maybe 50 years
don't
ago,
tell anyone that
manipulated thing. Yeah, I know. Seriously.
Don't tell anyone
but
that.
The truth
they won't
is,
buy
no,
the book.
That's what, no, but that's what the book's about. Right. So, yeah. And that's what you do. It's that if you are fixed, right, you fix them. So now they're people can't see through them because when they see through them, they see genuineness and they see caring and they see, you know, being a professional. And I don't remember what it was, but you're going to tell me what it is. You used an acronym in our last discussion when you're giving a presentation about, was it rapport?
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000, that's L-A-W to 21000, to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
What, the REFU, the rapport, empathy, trust, hope, and urgency?
Yeah, you use some sort of an acronym. I don't remember what it was. But anyway... So Yeah. And that's what it comes down to. So if they are now a professional who's authentic and cares about people, yeah, then it doesn't matter what you don't have to worry about. I need that sentence or what am I going to say? It all happens the right way. Yeah. You know,
definitely in layers. I mean, there's a point at which you have to say the right things or watch out for pitfalls of things that you might be doing to trigger that. But that's not the first place to start, right? You need the foundation before you can start building the house.
Okay. So I'd love to talk about some common mistakes people make, some advice you have, but do you have any like war stories? Do you have any, like, I was working with this company and this happened and we got this result, you know, good, not a bad ending. I mean, you know, good things, whatever from your journeys.
Yeah. So, okay. It always goes that route. I mean, you know, one of the things, and this is what I love about what I do, is most people throw together sales teams. They're hoping, you know, if they find people who are good at sales and they just give them some leads, then they'll know what to do. And so it's generally not that way. Because if you want to scale, if you want it to be repetitive, otherwise you're going to have a lot of turnover. And that's usually the challenge. But I noticed one company I worked with, they were actually offshore and had a bunch of agents who had been in the campaign for years. And so I worked with them for 2 weeks and with their managers to help their managers actually see how to manage everybody. And, you know, there were some people who didn't make it. There were some people who were like, wait a second, I don't want to be held accountable. I don't want to be here anymore. And that right. just happens, right? It's not my goal. I'm not there to like get people to run away screaming. But some people realize like, wait a second, I liked just collecting a check and playing salesperson, but I don't actually want to improve, right? They're just not open to it. But the great thing was after a few days and then for the rest of that time period, everybody whose goal was to be doing 3 sales a day, enrollments in a day in the product they were selling, they were moving towards that and they were getting there. And there was like this momentum shift. And it was really that mindset, right? Instead of like, we're calling these people and we're, you know, doing this to them. It's like, no, just help them, talk to them, care about them, and then help them and then find a solution. And then don't stop. If you know you can help them, just don't stop. And it shifted because the culture there on that offshore call center is more service. And so it's much tends to be more order taking. And it was great because, you know, the people they were selling to, they were helping.
Yeah. Do you find that really high performing salespeople are not the best at training other young salespeople?
No.
Like a different skill.
So it's a different skill and it's not even like all of them, but here's the challenge with it is that we humans are very, very self-centered and we think that everybody else thinks like we do and exactly likes the things that we do. And that's it. It's just all of us, right? Even myself.
It's human nature.
So that's our default nature. Yeah. That primal part of our brain that still thinks it's hundreds of thousands of years ago in a cave only cares about our survival and procreation. And that's literally it. And so what happens is if you're not careful, that's driving you, all of us, we all have that. And when somebody's really good in sales, especially if it comes more natural, I don't believe in a natural born salesperson. There could be someone who has like the charismatic side and that personality that might help.
That helps,
and
right.
They've been selling / hustling / talking people into
right,
stuff
they're
since
a hustler.
They were a kid.
Yeah.
And they've been doing it, you know, Malcolm Gladwell, 10,000 hours. They've been selling and hustling people for over 10,000 hours since they were probably like 4 and they just didn't stop. And it's natural. It's literally natural for them. The challenge is that they then just assume it's natural for everybody.
Right.
And the problem, it's like going to LeBron James right now and say, hey, LeBron, why don't you teach me how to dunk and shoot? He's like, well, you just do it for 30 years and be born with some talents and put in a lot of work, 12 hours a day, and you know, do it for 20, 30 years, and you'll get there, right? And so that's why you don't see great players generally as coaches. I mean, usually they don't need to financially, but then
a lot of players don't make it as a coach.
They don't. Very few do. Right?
It's a different skill, right?
It is. And and a lot of the times, because it's so natural to them, they have a hard time either teaching other people what they do naturally or having any kind of tolerance for someone who just doesn't get it. Like, what do you mean you don't get it? Like, it's so easy. I see the matrix. Right. How can you not see the matrix?
They get frustrated, right?
And that's the challenge. And again, it's a totally different skill as well. That's why I spend more of my time these days working with the leaders of teams, so sales managers and VPs, executives, team lead supervisors, because the standard thing in sales teams is, oh, you're good in sales, I'm going to promote you. Now you're a manager, but right. with no training. Not like, right. hey, I'm going to put you through this like 6 months of leadership training. No, just go, just do what you do best with this other nine people who also don't know what they're doing.
You know, it's funny. That's like the worst. In hindsight, that's like the worst thing a company can do. Let's take our best salesperson who's driving our sales out of sales and move him into something he knows nothing about and give him no training. You know, yeah. I think a lot of people use the excuse, they look and they go, oh, well, I mean, you know, it comes natural to Jason. And it's like you said, people have propensities, right? Their personality, whatever, they're hustlers, whatever. But if you don't do the 10,000 hours or the 30,000, whatever it is, you're not going to get there either. LeBron James didn't like wake up. He's a good basketball player. He never practiced, then went out to the NBA. He played a lot of basketball.
And still,
I think people miss
still,
that.
You know, all of those stories, like the Kobe's and the Michael Jordan's and all these pros in any sport, doesn't matter. It could be Tom Brady, whatever.
Right. Lots and lots early, of practice.
They're there late. They're practicing. They're thinking about it. They're living it. They're eating it. They're breathing it. And so, yeah, it's a different game when you're trying to manage somebody. And I'll tell you, here's the interesting thing. And I love that you added on like the training, like coaching, like training and mentoring and helping these leaders get better, because by the numbers, it totally makes sense even to take your top producer and put them into a leadership role. Because let's say somebody's doing, I don't know, we'll just take any kind of metric. I'm doing 20 sales a month as a good car salesperson. I move up. Okay, now I'm not getting those 20 sales. However, if I have a team of 10 people and those 10 people close two more sales a month than they are now because of my effort, now we're break even. Anything above that is gravy. So the numbers make sense.
As long as you give them the training. Through.
Yeah, that's what's missing. And that's
because they think the because you're a good, they think because you're a good salesperson, you don't need the training. That's why we're picking you, Jason.
Yeah.
What do we need to train you for? You've been selling 40 cars a month. Everybody sells three. Yeah. Well, that's unfortunate. Okay. So you mentioned here, so let's talk about some common mistakes that like people make that get in the way. I mean, I know it's all about being authentic and persuasion, but I would like to know, like, what are the common things that you see that people do that are wrong?
You know, one of the biggest, I'll say tells, because I was just thinking about poker. One of the biggest tells that I instantly see when it comes to order takers. And again, order taker is not a derogatory term. It's not like a permanent scarlet letter, like you're an order taker and you need to go find a job, you know, doing something else. It's more of a condition and state. Usually you look at the stats and you can tell someone's an order taker based on their closing percentage. But I honestly feel like that's a good base, because that person can take that empathy and then be successful if that's where they're coming from. But the number one tell I always see is, I call it the death pause, which is when, you know, here's the routine. And this is super important. If you're in sales or you're leading sales team, if you take this one thing and you listen for this and then you fix this, it will solve many things in the conversations. It will help them move forward. So here's the situation, right? So imagine, Mitch, you ask me a question, you're asking about the price. And then I go on, you know, let's say I'm a standard salesperson and I go on this long rambling monologue that goes around in circles that doesn't actually answer the question, that actually makes you more scared than if you hadn't asked the question. And then at the end of my answer, I pause, because common courtesy, I'm going to pause. That's the polite thing to do. And then I'm going to give you a chance if you have more questions, right? It's just a nice thing to do. So I pause. Your brain now freaked out even more because my answer was probably crap, and, you know, scaring you. And if you asked one question, it's because you're scared. Otherwise, you would be swiping your credit card and paying, right? Or signing on the dotted line.
Yeah,
and so your resisting. Brain goes, what other questions do I have? Because I'm scared, right? That's the thing. Again, if you haven't bought yet, it's because you're afraid of something.
Right.
And so what does your brain do and your mouth? You, the non-buying customer, throw out another question.
Right.
So I thinking I'm doing a great job because my job is to answer questions. And if I answer them all, I'm going to win.
Yeah. I mean, there are signs of interest, right? It shows that you're interested in buying.
Of course.
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
But what happens is then I answer another question. And then at the end, I pause because it's the nice thing to do. And I was told, answer all their questions and then you'll win, right? When they run out of questions, there's no objections anymore. I'll win. The problem is that you keep giving that person a chance to ask a question. And every time they ask a question, that fear part of their brain is just going to dig in deeper and deeper. There's rarely ever the right answer. They're just looking for things. And you're never going to say always the right things. You're going to trigger it. And so what happens is that I call it that death pause because it's the death by a thousand punches, right? You are going to lose. They will eventually get you and they will walk away. And instead, the best thing to do is you answer their question like a professional and then just continue with whatever you were doing. Because most likely the question was triggered by something you asked that started getting real. Like if we're talking, I'm like, hey, Mitch, so I'm going to help you with this. What about this? What about this? All right. So the next part's the application. What's your social security number? Whoa, hold on, Jason. Let me what is this going to cost? Like there's something that freaked you out. And so you just got to return to that question. Just go back to it and just keep moving forward and don't stop and don't leave that gap in there. Whenever I hear that gap, that pause, I know that person's just going to keep getting beaten and they're going to lose.
But that's something that you have to practice at.
You have to be aware of it. So the first part is being aware, you know, that's where call recordings, listening in, because most people won't believe it. It's like, no, I don't do that. Okay. Here, listen to this. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Oh God, there it is again. Oh yeah. Oh, and then they hung up. Oh yeah. I could see it now.
Yeah. Well, a lot of all the stuff we do is consciousness. You know, you're just nervous about this stuff. It's your first time. You don't realize you're just always nervous about it. You don't even hear yourself. Like these people are shocked, right? They're shocked. They're like, I don't do that. Yeah, of course you do.
Or they're just in the habit, or they just think they're doing the right thing, right? I'm giving you the opportunity to ask me questions. Like this podcast, I answer my questions. I try to keep them short. They're not always short here in our conversation. I have some longer stories. And then I pause. And why? Yeah. Because it's not my show, it's your show, and I want you to ask me more questions. Now, if I was afraid of you asking me questions, I would just steamroll through this, but you wouldn't even publish this episode because it would be garbage. So I pause, you hit me with another question.
Right.
You know, we'll see how I do. I don't know.
Right. Well, you're a polite guest though, because you give me openings to come in and say things. Some people I do have to like jump in the middle. Like, Jason, wait, let's back up, you know, and I ask a question. To really break up the conversation, it's, you know, nobody wants to listen to me or you talk for 50 minutes and now without having, we want to have a dialogue.
Unless they do want to hear me for a long time, then they can probably get the book on Audible. It's 5.5 hours long.
I had a comment from one guy like, dude, don't talk so much. Like, dude, it's my fucking show, you know? I'm like,
yeah,
so it's my pretty funny.
I do whatever I want.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Get your own podcast.
Hey, get your own podcast, buddy.
Right. All right. What other common mistakes do people make?
You know,
that was so a good
those
one,
are the me. Those are that one's a, that one's a really big one. You know, one of the biggest things too is salespeople really focus on the sale. They focus on their part in the process, their little world, and they're not thinking long term. They're not thinking that whatever they're doing and selling is the beginning of something, right? So I sell you a car. That's the beginning of you owning that car. But now you own that car, right? If I sold you life insurance, that's the beginning of you having life insurance. But each day you've got to decide, do I still want to keep this or do I want to cancel it? So there's this whole like retention thing that happens. A lot of salespeople, they don't care. They just sell and they say whatever they need to say to get the deal. They don't set proper expectations and then they hope to get paid and then they move on to the next one and they literally don't care, which is why in organizations, there's always a battle between the back end and the front end, the operations, the customer service, retention, and sales, because sales is usually self-centered on their commission, their money, and they just don't care what happens, even if they're throwing garbage over the wall. And the key is to set those right expectations. Now, what happens is a lot of salespeople, and again, this is tons of experience, so I'm not just picking on salespeople, because I've seen it, is a lot of salespeople are afraid of setting expectations and afraid of pointing out the things that might happen after somebody buys because they don't want to lose the deal because they're missing that confidence because they're not professional. And so one of the biggest things, if you want to help your sales career and your company, is to set those right expectations and address buyer's remorse before you're done in your sales process, because everybody will have a flash of regret when they buy something. We all do it, unless it's small, like you're buying a pack of gum. That flash of regret, if it sucks, is very small, but otherwise it's there. And so when you're selling, one of the biggest things I always say, and I have it in the book and I train people on it, is set the right expectations, address it. Buyer's remorse is going to kick in. And so you want to talk to them about it. Instead of being afraid of it and hoping they just lose your number or don't call you back, just talk about the feelings that person's going to have. Because here's the cool thing. If I tell you, hey, you're going to buy this life insurance policy, and then here's what I know, over the next couple of days, you're going to think about it and you're going to regret it. You might even wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning in a cold sweat and go, why did I do this? I don't need this. I shouldn't pay for this. I have a friend who bought life insurance. They didn't even use it. And then they wasted that money, and or so-and-so happened, died, and then they couldn't even get it. Like, all these things flash in their head. So it happens to everybody. If you tell them that kind of stuff will happen, and I say, this will happen to you. At some point, these thoughts are going to come in. Call me. I'll reassure you. I can explain why it makes sense. Don't worry about it. It happens to everybody. When that does happen, when you do wake up at 2 a.m. in a cold sweat thinking, oh my gosh, what did I do? Then you'll say, wait, Jason told me this was going to happen.
Right, that's exactly. Right.
I made a right decision. Yep. I'll call him tomorrow. This is okay. That's the difference in a professional to me, is setting that expectation. You're going to feel this. This is what's going to happen. Don't worry. It's normal. Versus good luck.
Yeah. Well, I think two things. One is, it goes right to your medical example, right? If the doctor tells you, listen, you might have these symptoms because it's a side effect of what happens. It's up. Doesn't mean you're dying. Then you don't act like you're dying. But if he didn't tell you that, first thing you'd be like, oh my God, the doctor didn't tell me that. That must be bad. Or he would have told me that. And what am I going to, you know, the whole thing. Right. But I think people, salespeople, especially the younger ones, are so afraid. They can't believe that they're actually making a sale to begin with. And subconsciously or subconsciously, they're like, I want to get the hell out of here with this sale before this person changes their mind. And a lot of times they do change their mind. They just do it later, you know?
Yeah. So that's a big one. If somebody wants to have a long-term successful career, instead of just like short-term success, but then all these cancels or refunds or whatever happens, then it's about setting that right expectation. And here's the thing, going back to your point of like, when you're in sales, there's moments where you've got somebody who wants to buy, you don't want to screw that up. The reason why is, even if you're amazing at sales, I think I'm pretty good at sales. I know some people who are really good at sales. You're still losing most of the time. Right. If you're really good at sales, you might be closing 30%, 40%, depending on what kind of lead.
Baseball.
Who you're talking. Right. That's like baseball. Right. So that means you're striking out 60, 70, 80. I know people who, they're amazing, and amazing in their industry is 10%. That means they're losing 90% of the time, which then, that's mental. That's so hard. That's why most people can't make it. But then when you have that 10%, you're so desperate because you've been punched in the face 9 other times or struck out 9 other times that you're just like, I don't want to blow this. So I'll just say whatever it takes. And then it's just bad.
Yeah. Because you haven't built any kind of rapport, any kind of relationship, you know,
you're desperate for that 10%. And then you
haven't reinforced anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very common in the life insurance business because it's like we said, it's an intangible. It's very difficult to sell. Nobody wants it. You can ask 12 people. Every one of them will say, why would you do that? And they have no background. They don't know anything about it. They don't know anything about you. It's like, you know, one thing I hate soundbite financial planning, like on the radio. So, you know, on TV, and you have these financial professionals, let's call them, but you know, I'm going to get, I work with a lot of financial guys, so they're going to criticize me. But the ones like on the TV ones, they'll either talk to you for 2 seconds, or they'll just read like, oh, well, Jason sent us an email and give you advice. They don't know you from Adam. They don't know your situation. And it is, forget about malpractice. I mean, it's dangerous to do things like that. And I hate it. My wife wants to get me crazy. She put Susie Orman on the TV. I listen, I go nuts. You know, and I know people love Susie Orman or whatever, but I've heard her give, and I've heard a lot of professionals give advice to somebody. And I go like, how could she say that? She doesn't know this person's situation. She hasn't done a fact finder and know about their family situation, their financial situation, what kind of debt they have and this and that, what keeps them up at night. It's just not a good way to do things. And I think that, you know, people don't it just gets under my skin. I forget why they.
I completely agree regarding her and others like that in that frame where it's an incomplete picture. It's here's an email. Here's a question. Hey, should I invest in a 401k? Okay, here's why that's all you needed to make that kind of crystal ball decision.
Yeah, if you're maxing out your 401k, but you're running up your credit card debt and you got no money left at the end of the month, maybe it's not the best thing for you right now in your life.
Yeah. So when I mentioned in the book, there's a chapter in there called Sales Malpractice, where because of this medical example, and I use that in the book a lot to help people understand, again, what a professional does, because right. We've all experienced doctors. So, yeah. You know, we know what a professional is versus sales, which doesn't have a profession. So it's a little bit different. But in sales, and I learned this one early on in sales, especially in the mortgage business, when people just want to know the rate. Hey, what's my rate going to be? Well, I don't know. I got to pull your credit. I got to look at things.
We lie to them and say it's going to be right.
How much? Well, and that's what happens, right? And so sales malpractice, like medical malpractice, is prescription before diagnosis is malpractice. If I give you the prescription without doing my examination, without going through my due diligence, that's malpractice. In sales, that's sometimes called a bait and switch. What's my rate going to be? Oh, our rates right now are running at 4%. Okay, that sounds good. Pull credit. Oh, your rate's 5%. Well, why is that different? Well, because I was just throwing crap out there earlier. And now this is the truth. So it's that's the same thing that you're talking about with the financial stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So we've been on the mic for a while and I'm taking up a lot of your time, but so you know that this is an entrepreneur's podcast. A lot of the people that listen in my audience are small business owners and startups. They're not working necessarily in teams and the kind of people you normally work with. But I think you and I both agree, we've said this before off the microphone, that if you own a business, you are a salesperson. It's the only way you drive what you do. You don't make a product, put it in the window and go sit in the back of the store. Maybe people do that. And wait for people to come in and buy, right? So do you have some different advice? Are there things, if I'm a business owner, I'm getting started, that I should, obviously authentic persuasion is important all across the board, but any other particular advice for the small business owner, the entrepreneur?
100%. Totally different advice, but still the same. So the sales stuff is important. I think one of the best things, and this goes to a different book, which has kind of been my go-to for a very long time, which is The E-Myth Revisited by Michael Gerber. Number one advice for small business owners, solopreneurs, even the people I work with that are on the smaller end of their business size or in their maturity, right? So it's early on and they're still growing, is understanding who you are. Are you that technician? Are you that visionary? Or are you the manager in the framework? And people can look at that. I'm not going to go through in a lot of detail, but you want to understand, I mean, most technicians are the ones who start businesses because, hey, I'm good at building websites. Oh, I should just go into my own, start my own company building websites. That's great. Right. Except that's one piece of a business. You also have to do sales. You have to do marketing. So the first part is being aware of who you are, what you're good at, and then filling in the rest. If you're a technician building websites, if you want to succeed in business, even if you don't want to grow that much, you need to have somebody doing the sales, or you've got to get good at sales and you've got to do it. Now, and if, a lot
you're
of
right.
times
it's not your wheelhouse. Maybe you do need to bring someone in, right?
Or what I see, and this is also, this might be applicable to some people listening or watching, is I'm great at building websites. I'm going to go start a web design company. Great. And because you're passionate about it, because you know it and you know how to talk about it, you're getting sales. Because you're actually good at, because you can talk, it's your baby, right? Everyone can talk about how cute their baby is and sell their baby, right? Yeah, they're passionate about it. So they have that passion. Then what happens? They go, I'm growing, I'm busy, I want to have a sales team do this so I don't have to do this anymore. Hire salespeople, you're good at sales, we design websites, go find some clients. The problem is that they're not training, they're abdicating sales and sales development to somebody else. And the hardest part for that founder salesperson who's also the technician is to build scripts, build processes, build training, actually give their people a chance at being successful. Where I help a lot of companies with that part because they know they want to. And usually what happens by the time people talk to me, founders and small business owners, they've gone through a bunch of salespeople who have come and gone because they were hoping they knew what to do for them. And it doesn't work that way. And no one can sell No one thinks your baby is as cute as you do. So no one's going to sell it with the passion you have. And no one's going to care as much as you do. And so you really have to build way more stuff than you might think when you're small for that team if you want to have a chance at succeeding in sales.
Yeah, and you're so far removed from what you really were good at that point, you don't even realize. You think you're good at everything. It's very common. Business owners are, they're in a business, it's doing well, they're good at whatever it is that business does, but that doesn't mean that they're good at business in general. And then there's a shift, or they sell the business or whatever it is, and they go and they struggle to be successful in other business because they don't talk to guys like you and they don't do the research. They weren't used to learning about selling and all that because it was working for them in that particular business because they somehow, like you said, their personality, whatever, clicked in whatever they were doing. But it's not always transferable to the next business. Matter of fact, I know very few people. I know some people that are very good setting up businesses, growing the businesses, selling them, right? And they move on to the next business, but a lot of people are not.
Yeah. And then the other thing that I would say just really quickly, and anybody who wants to talk about this more, you know, let me know. I'm happy to chat and give some advice on this side. But also being aware, if you're small, if you're a founder, you're growing a team, starting hiring your first salesperson, is understanding what type of salesperson you want and that you can afford. So do you want the veteran who knows what they're doing, who's going to want a big salary, they're going to want a big commission, but probably be completely untrainable and want to do everything their way, which might end up being a square peg in a round hole? You won't have to manage them, but I rarely ever see that person succeed. Or do you want somebody who's green and new to sales, who's going to be cheap for you, but you're going to have to babysit them and hold their hand for a long time, but then you're going to have somebody who knows your way, right? Then you've raised someone into your business and then you have, you know, what you want. And then the third category is that entrepreneurial salesperson, that salesperson who's more of the hustler, who's willing to be flexible, who's willing to take direction, but also learn and grow. They will also not be with you very long because once they figure it out and be good, they'll be like, oh, I'm good at this. I'm going to go start my own business. And that's okay too. You might just only have them for 6 or 9 months or 12 months and get some momentum and then move on. So you've got to be aware of what you want and what you're willing to invest in time and money. And then pick smartly. And none of those things are right or wrong. You just got to be conscious. Most founders, owners, they don't have any clue of who they're hiring or why. And they generally make just the wrong choices for their investment of time and energy.
Right. And they go in circles for a long time. Yeah. Well, Jason, I thank you very much. The book is Selling with Authentic Persuasion, Transform from Order Taker to Quota Breaker. And people can get the book on Amazon, right? And watch for you. You speak around on Zoom all over the place. And I thank you for spending time with me today.
I appreciate it, Mitch. And I hope this helps. And I love the stuff that you're doing with the show. So thanks for having me here.
Thanks, Jason.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.